never heard that song. That was powerful words. Thank you, everyone, for being here this evening. And thanks also. I appreciate what Brad said about moms that bring the children. It's one thing for us to get to the trouble, to get to a meeting every night. It's another thing when you're having to get little ones all the time. And thank you very much. All right. Getting into our material tonight, what we've been talking about is avoiding parenting pitfalls. There's all sorts of challenges pop up. Sometimes this has a problem you didn't see coming, and then that one's going on. We have to deal with our own reactions. We've talked about the importance of discipline, not rewarding misbehavior. And don't bribe them into try to bribe them out of misbehavior also. There can be some consequences, and there can be some understanding, some good things if they're doing good, but don't try to discipline with bribery, things like that. We've talked about expectations and various things. We're going to pick up tonight with number 7, and the mistake here is training them to disrespect instructions given calmly. So mistake number 7, training them to disrespect instructions given calmly. Think about that for a minute. While you're thinking about it, let me tell you, a while back, I took my boys to a sportsman show, and there was a man there that had bird dogs, and he did a demonstration. And I was just astounded at the amount of training he had with those bird dogs. I mean, they did what he asked them to do. You know, if he took a ball and he threw it, they would sit there and not chase the ball until he gave the signal. Oh, man, those dogs took off. Bam! But then if he gave a signal, they stopped in their tracks, you know, until he gave the number. And just the different things, he would have a bird there in front of him, and here's bird dogs, and they're not going to do anything until he says to do something. And they don't kill the bird, but they get it in their mouth. And after watching all that, I said to him afterwards, I said, wow, that was really impressive. And I said, you know, a lot of the principles are like, with child training as well. I said, oh, I know. He said, we'll be at a restaurant and people will come over and they'll say, you know, I was noticing how well behaved your children are. And they said, how did you do that? He said, I tell them, I treat them like dogs. But he doesn't mean he treats them badly. But think about that for a minute. There are people who put seemingly more into their dogs than they do their children. Because there are people that care enough to really train their dogs and then don't care enough to train their children. That's sad. And one of the problems is that even when we're not doing the right thing, we end up inadvertently training them in the wrong way. So that's what this one is about with the tone of voice. So let's say it's time for Junior's bedtime, and there's better things to do in life than play video games all the time, but for this illustration, he's playing his game, and Mom knows that he's got tests tomorrow, and he's got to get to bed and different things, so she comes in and says, Junior, oh, I'm giving you away what's going to happen. Yeah, forget that. Pretend you didn't see the jury. Disregard that. And he's sitting here doing this, and she comes in. She says, Junior, it's time for bed. You need to turn that off and get upstairs and go to bed. Uh-huh. A few minutes later, she says, Junior, I'm in it. You got to go now. Okay. A few minutes later, Junior, I'm in it. It's getting late. You have to turn that off and get to it. Okay, just one more level. After several minutes of this, phone rings, Mom has to deal with it, maybe some family members, some health problems. You know, it takes a while, 45 minutes later. Okay, she's making her plans, how she's going to help with that and everything. She hangs up phone, it's over an hour past, it's bedtime. She turns around, she looks in there, and where is he at? Now what does she do? Now her voice escalates, right? Junior, you get up right now. You know, why? And, you know, and she starts coming over. Does this time he go, uh-huh. No, this time he does what? Down goes the control, and he goes to bed. And as he goes, she's going to say something like this. Oh, I don't know why he won't go back. Now, if you've ever seen that type of scenario, think about this from Junior's point of view. Why is Junior doing that? Because she has trained him to disrespect instructions stated calmly. If she's not yelling and screaming, he knows he's not to the point anything needs to be done yet. It can be ignored. It can be, just a minute. You're coming now! There he goes. So she's created this problem. So my suggestion would be what mom needs to do is after this has been going on, sit down and have a talk with him. And I think a good way might be to apologize. This is kind of her fault. And so maybe she says, Junior, you like it when I yell at you? And he goes, no. She said, well, I'm sorry I've been doing that. I shouldn't yell at you, and I'm sorry. And I'm going to try to stop yelling at you and not do that anymore. And Junior goes, cool. Because he hasn't been trained to be more respectful and say, yes, ma'am. But we can get to that later. So he says, cool. She says, so I'm not going to yell next time. But we're going to have a new policy. I'm going to tell you one time what to do. And then you're going to do it, or you're going to be punished. Does that sound fair? Does that sound better? Yeah. How many people here think that Junior believes it, understands it, and is going to remember that? No, because she has trained him for years to do this, right? And he's not a puppy. You know, he's an old enough dog, it's going to be hard to learn new tricks. So even though she's explained it to him, and he has to repeat it back to him, it's going to take some convincing. So that night, and my wife's pointing out, you can give him a notice, you know, ahead. So maybe she comes in and says, okay, Junior, you need to wind up what you're doing, because in 5 minutes, it's going to be time for bed. So, and he goes, And then 5 minutes later, she goes, okay, Junior, I want you to get up now and go to bed. Get this minute. What? She says, come here. You know, you're going to get a spanking. What? What's going through his mind? But you weren't yelling yet. You weren't screaming. And she says, this is what we talked about. I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to scream. But it's your job to take it seriously when I say it calmly. She talks about it. She explains it to him. He's punished. She says, would you like to apologize? He apologizes. She gives him a hug. Everything's okay, and he goes to bed. You know, she might need to do it the next night. She might need to do it the next night. But if she will not give up, because she's kind of trained herself too, if she will have the self-control and not give up, what's going to soon be happening in that home? Junior, it's time to get up now and go to bed. Yes, ma'am. So, it's an easy thing to slip into. But if you think about it this way, it's our choice. Choice A, they never obey. Choice B, they obey after you scream or after you say it over and over and over and over, or they obey on the first time and call calm instructions without yelling, nagging, badgering. Which of those is best? Yeah. But we have to use some self-control ourselves and discipline ourselves to better discipline our kids. Mistake number 8, parenting pitfall that we can fall into. Fathers discouraging and provoking to wrath. And let me just say, mothers can do this too. But Paul singles out fathers on this, and fathers probably do it more often. And so we'll be talking about fathers, but if any mother needs to apply it, do so as well. Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. Paul has been talking about different roles in relationships, and he's talked about husbands and wives and children and parents. And then he says, fathers, provoke not your children that they be not discouraged. Ephesians 6, 4. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. There's different ways that we can discourage our children. And one of them is this. Some children, and you, some of you may have grown up in a home like this, that you get one of two things from dad, attention-wise, criticism or nothing. And there have been kids that end up misbehaving because it's the only way they can get dad's attention. Dad's a busy man. He's got things to do. He's working hard doing this. He's thinking about responsibilities there. He needs some downtime. He wants mom to take care of the kids. And he doesn't seem to really care. So if he was supposed to mow the grass and he did a really good job and he did the weed eating and everything and he cleaned it up and he did a real good job, dad pulls in, never says, "Wow, yard looks good, son." He says, "You're doing a good job. I'm proud of you." Give him a hug. No, he never gets that hug. He never gets that "I'm proud of you." He never gets that "good job." You know, he came home, you know, he won a prize at school or something. Dad, here, quiet. You know, I got to work on something here. He never gets support in a positive way. It's just nothing. Until he messes up. Instead of a good grade, he flunked a test. And now dad's attention is in place. Instead of he mowed the grass well, he ran over those potted flowers, you know, that had been planted there. And now he's going to hear it. What's it like for a little guy to try to deal with that? Would that be discouraging? Provoke not your children, lest they be discouraged. Provoke not your children to wrath. I don't know why, but sometimes fathers let me just say it this way. Don't think it's unmanly to let your kids know how much you love them. Don't think it makes them arrogant to let them know you appreciate a good job they've done or something. When Paul writes letters to grown brethren, if they've done something well, does he hesitate to praise them and let them know that he appreciates what they've done and that other people are hearing about them, appreciate them, just let them know, that's great. Does he do that? Yeah. When they're messing up, does Paul let them know where he's messing up and lower the boom when he needs to? Yes, he does. Don't do just one and not the other, or just one or the other. Children need both. Another thing can happen is expecting talents beyond their capacity. Children should be expected to behave, to do what's morally good, and to be respectful and behave. Not every child is going to be able to do everything other children can do. You know, have you ever gone to a Little League game and there's that one dad that's making the whole thing unpleasant for everybody? Yelling at his son or yelling at the umpire or yelling at the coach. He's just really upset. And I don't know, but I think sometimes what's going on there was when he was a kid, he loved baseball and he was going to be what? You know, he was going to be a star and envisioned. He was going to be major league and everything else. So he did little league and he was getting better and he was all excited. And then, he got in high school, he made the team, and then he went to college, he didn't make the team, and no scouts ever looked at him, and then he got a job, and then he got married, and then one day the doctor said, it's a boy! And you start getting a vicarious thing. And, you know, if you want him to be a linebacker, you know, my boy's going to be a linebacker. He's going to play college football. And if he weighs 110 pounds soaking wet, I got news for you. It's not happening. My daughter is going to be an opera singer. You know what? If she's tone deaf, that is not happening. We don't need to try to live through our children. Love that child. And he may have a physical disability. He may have an academic disability. But one of the things I've seen that's beautiful sometimes with people who have children who have a limitation here or there is when they're encouraged to do what they can do. Now, if people make mistakes, oh, he's missing a foot, so he lies. Oh, he's missing a foot, so, you know, he punches you in the nose. Oh, he's missing a foot, so he steals. No, that doesn't follow. He's missing a foot, so he doesn't have 2 feet. That's it. One of the best things that parents can do, you hear about and you see doing, is when they do expect the child to do what they can do. I'm studying with an elderly man up in Pennsylvania. He's 89 years old. I really like him. Good man. But he's told me this story more than once about a relative, distant relative that he had Thanksgiving dinner with. He said, he was just amazed. The boy has only a nub here and here and here and here. And he said, I was sitting there at Thanksgiving dinner, and he said, he didn't make any more of a mess at his place than I did at mine. And he fed himself. Now, there, he couldn't do everything, and so his parents had done what they could to help him out. The plate had a raised edge on it, and there was a spoon. And so he would take the spoon and shovel it up underneath what he wanted to take a bite of. And there's that raised edge. Then he would take that nub, and he would bap that spoon, and he'd catch it. Then he'd take the spoon again. He'd put it where he wanted his food. He'd take that nub, bap, and he'd catch it. And then afterwards, when they're doing finger foods, his mom would just walk by and stick a snack on his shoulder. And he'd go. Now, you know what? I'm sure he would have been thrilled if he could have had an arm and a leg. And nobody should expect him to be able to run hurdles or something. But instead of acting like he couldn't do anything, you see how they let him do what he could do? That was a beautiful thing. But if you expect a child to do what they can't do, how discouraging would that be? Another thing is when we're hypocritical. And kids can see that pretty quick. In high school, my friend told me he smoked, and he said, you know why I smoke? Because my dad said, don't ever let me catch you smoking. You know, and so that's why he decided to start smoking. He knew it was a bad thing, and he knew it was going to be bad for him, but that made him mad enough that he decided, I'm going to start smoking. Fathers can do all sorts of foolish things. And fluctuating boundaries can really be angry. Suppose you got a dad, and he might come home in a good mood, and this is going to be allowed, and he comes home in a bad mood, and it's not. So if he comes home in a good mood, and Junior smarts off at his mom, and Dad thinks what? He thinks that's funny. The other day, Junior smarts off at his mom, but he doesn't realize that Dad's in a bad mood, that a bunch of stuff went wrong at work, and now he gets smacked. Can you see how discouraging and angry that would make you as a child? Think of cattle fences. You can put some cattle in a pasture, and you can run some electric fence, and pretty soon they understand quickly what. That's an electric fence. You just stop right there. But it doesn't mean that they're miserable, anxious cows, because here's number of acres, and they know where they can be, and they know where they can't be. They know where the boundaries are. I want you to imagine what kind of a cow you would be if those fences were moving all the time. Where are they today? Right over there. Over there. There's some clover. Yeah. You would be a really nervous cow. You don't know what to expect. Fathers, provoke not your children, lest they be discouraged. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Nurture them in chastening the admonition of the Lord. And especially the abusive discipline that we've talked about. If dad comes home, you broke that. And off comes that belt. And I'm not saying you can't speak with a belt. There's a difference here in why and how. And off comes, and he's yelling at him and he's beating it. Does the kid have any impression that dad's doing this because he loves me? Does he think dad's doing this because he's wanting to train me and help me to do better and I deserve this? No, he knows what this is, doesn't he? That is one mean man, and he's abusing me again. You know, he's hurting me again. That's going to discourage, and that's going to make him angry. Don't do that. Take the time. And if there's a situation where you're too angry, you know what might be good to do? Son, I want you to go sit down in your room, and after I'm a little bit calmer, I'll come in and talk about it. Take a few minutes to recompose, think about what does my boy need right now? How can I help my, you know, get yourself calmed down before you go in. And if it was just an accident, you know, if it was an accident that just happened, don't punish him. If it was an accident because he was being too careless and broke something, and you need have him repay it to learn the lesson of being careful, okay, do that. If he did something that actually needs punishment, then do it after you've calmed down so that he knows you're not doing it just selfishly out of anger. Mistake number 9, failing to parent with joy. In Galatians 5, it lists the fruits of the Spirit. And the first three are love, joy, and peace. Failing to parent with joy. Have you ever seen a home where they have rules and have expectations and children obeying the rules and they're putting their dirty dishes in the sink, they're picking up their socks, they're doing their homework, but there does not seem to be any joy in that house? They're eating their peas. There just doesn't seem to be any joy in that house. I don't want my kids to grow up in a house like that. I've made enough of some of these same mistakes myself, but I don't want to make the other mistakes, and I don't want to make this one. Look at the word joy and rejoice in regards to the home, children, the mother, the husband and wife relationship, and just different things. Husband and wife, rejoice in the wife of your youth, Proverbs 5, of the father of his children. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He will have joy of him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her rejoice who gave birth to you, Proverbs 23. And then in our countenance, in our interaction, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. But when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. A cheerful heart has a continual feast. I like that. A cheerful heart has a continual feast. You just think about that. We all know people that are just exceptionally happy. And little things just make them happy. Big things make them even happier. But they're not walking around in misery and bitterness and other things, and they're able to just enjoy life, right? And so guess what? They have a continual feast. You know, if it's a sunny day, oh, look at that. What a beautiful day. You know, if it's rainy, oh, good, we're going to get some good flowers. It's a continual feast. Whereas there's other people, it's what? You can make yourself miserable and make people miserable around you. A cheerful heart has a continual peace. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. Proverbs 15. The worthy woman, the law of kindness is on her tongue. Proverbs 17. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. There's not many sounds that are more fun than a baby laughing. You ever just listen to a little baby when they just start really getting tickled and they're cackling and stuff? Man, let that sound be in your home. You know, there's a time when sometimes when they're running around making too much noise and everything, that okay, kids, settle down. And there's times that they need to learn to be quiet. And if adults are talking, you need to go read a book and stuff. But, oh, let there be laughter. Let there be joy. And if you think about your own childhood, think of what were some of the favorite memories that you have of your childhood. You know what? Sometimes it's not the things that mom and dad thought. Sometimes mom and dad, you know, they're busy making money, busy making money, busy making money. Not spending much time with the kids, but we're busy making money, busy making money. We'll go to Disney World, you know, in the spring. And then finally, Disney comes. But they haven't spent time together. They haven't trained the children. Mom and dad aren't getting along that good. The siblings aren't getting along that good. They haven't trained with good manners and everything. And so now they've spent thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, at the resort they're going to stay at and everything else and everything. And they get loaded up in the minivan. They're all mad at each other, and they're arguing all the way down, and they're fussing and everything. They spent all that money, didn't have that good of a time. But you stop and think about what was something that you just really loved as a child. And it might be, you know, on Saturday mornings, Dad would take us to get Krispy Kreme donuts or something like that. Or remember when we used to play this game, you know, or remember when we used to go out and do this in the rain. And sometimes it's real simple things, or, some silly songs that they did or games that they did together and stuff. And you value, though, whatever it was in your childhood, let's make sure our kids have that, too. Now, they also need chores and work because this is a different subject. We've raised a group of people that think they get to do what they want to do all the time. And they think adulthood is when they really get to do what they want to do all the time. No, adulthood doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want to do all the time. Adulthood means there's a lot of responsibilities. So there needs to be chores, there needs to be work. And there's a good principle in after you've worked, then have time to play. But let that joy be there. While they're working, you can have joy. While they're playing, you can have joy. But let there be joy and happiness in the home. Too many times I've interfered with that. Number 10, failing to use rod and reproof. We read this proverb two or three times during the week. And it says, the rod and reproof bring wisdom. I want you to think with me for a moment about how important it is to have both of those. What if you just have the rod? Okay? So like you're a little guy, and you're walking through the house, and you've been doing this, and you've been doing that, and you said that to your brother, and now you're headed to go do this, and as you walk by your dad, he just smacks you. He didn't tell you why. He didn't have a heart-to-heart talk with you. He just smacked you. What did he learn? Stay away from dad. That's about all you learned. The rod without reproof doesn't work. What if it's just reproof? My wife was at Walmart one time, and there was this little ratty kid with a very foolish mother. And this kid is pitching a fit. And it was at the stage, you ever seen those kids where they're like, I hate you, I hate you, and they're trying to kick mom? Well, that's That's what's going on. So he's screaming and yelling at his mom. He's trying to kick her and, you know, I hate you. And mom had apparently read some of those parenting articles or books, you know, that said, let the child know how you feel. You know, express your feelings. Let him know how that makes you feel bad. So that, I guess that's why she's doing this. So as this child is trying to kick her and telling her he hates her, she's very calmly saying, it doesn't make mommy happy when you do that. He leans up as far as he can in the little cart and he goes, I hate you. No, shut up. He goes, shut up. One of the two. I've forgotten now which it was. What a clueless woman. When your child is kicking you and telling you he hates you, he's not trying to make you feel good. He knows that doesn't make you feel good. That's why he's doing it. Just reproving him without giving any consequence, it's making a fool out of you, and you're completely abandoning your job of training your child. You know what he needs? He needs whooping. But he doesn't just need the rod, he needs reproof. The rod and reproof bring wisdom. So I'm going to tell you a story in a second. No, that's the next point. Let me go ahead and say this. There's value. If you were raised in a home, well, I won't ask for a show of hands, but just think about this or not. Some of you were raised in a home where before you, well, I think I will to make this point. If you were raised in a home where before you got your spanking, you had to listen to a lecture, raise your hand. Okay, not usually there's more than that. If you were raised in that home, did you often wish that the lecture would stop and they just go ahead and get on with the spanking? Yes. That's the way it generally is. Why? Well, for one thing, the spanking was going to hurt back here. Where does the lecture hurt? Yeah, it hurts in here. Now, if there's not going to be anything back here, then you can just, it doesn't make mommy happy. Yeah, that lecture's not going anywhere. But when there's going to be some consequence, this is going to hurt here, but the lecture hurts here. And the anticipation also helps. And I illustrate that by, say, if you went to the doctor and he said, you know, Scott, I'm going to have to give you a shot. Roll up your sleeve. That's not too bad, right? But man, if he goes, I'm sorry, Scott. You're going to have to get a shot. I hate to do this. Roll up your sleeve. He says, you might want to hold on to something. Are you ready? Man, that thing's going to hurt more, right? Because it's just the anticipation of it. So the same spanking, if it says, bam, it's not maybe going to be as meaningful as where there's the lecture that's touching here and everything else. And you get their attention. And then they need to apologize afterwards. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. We're going to do the last point for tonight, which is number 11. And that's where the story is I'm going to tell you. Settling for situation control instead of training the child. Think about what that means for a minute. Training a child is one thing. Just trying to control a situation is another. Michael and Debbie Pearl are some people, I think they're kind of maybe Mennonites or something similar to that, but they've written some child training material. A lot of it's pretty good. And he had an article that I'll mention briefly that kind of illustrated this principle, and it was about a little boy and a Twinkie. And the story was, and he knew about this situation in the family, some kids were over to play, and here's the boy of the house, and the boys are outside playing, and the boy runs into the house and grabs a Twinkie and is about to head back outside. Problem is, mom knows that's the only Twinkie. So moms, what, do you see a problem here? There's a bunch of boys, or plurality of boys, and your son just came in and took the only Twinkie about to go out and eat it in front of the other boys. So every mom here sees what the problem is, so mom realizes this is not a good situation. So you got to control the situation. So mom goes out and says, no, you can't have that. Give it back. There's not enough for everybody else. Well, she hasn't trained him well, and so guess what he did? He's not giving it back. Go, give me that Twinkie. And then he acts like he's going to open for it, and apparently a little bit of maybe wrestling match goes on for the Twinkie. And eventually mom gets the Twinkie. I don't know what condition it was in by the time she got it, but she got it. And then the kid goes, then can I have a cracker? And she goes, okay. Yeah. What happened here? Mom got focused on the situation. I've got to make sure he doesn't go out and eat that Twinkie in front of everybody else. Right, right, that's good. But did she train her child? No, did he need training? Yeah, because he defied her right there. But she didn't pay attention to that because she's busy focused on controlling the Twinkie situation, right? Now, he needed a spanking. When she said, give me the Twinkie, and he went like this, instead of giving it back, he needs to be punished. Now, this is what happened with my little girl. I've got six children. We were blessed with six children, three boys, three girls. And they have had different personalities. And three of them picked one day in their life to just go for it. Others haven't. My youngest has never just picked a day, I'm going for it, I'm not going to obey. He's never done that, but he's been a skirmisher. So he's gotten more spankings than anybody else. But with three of them, there was one major battle, and that was about it. Brianne is a sweetheart of a girl. When she was a little baby, they called her Smiley. She was always happy, and I hardly ever needed to spank her. You know, and when I did, that was about all it took, you know, or maybe a little bit more than that. And, you know, she was a really good girl. And here's her picture. This is over in the Czech Republic. We moved over there after the Berlin Wall came down, lived there a couple times. That's my oldest daughter, April. There's Adam, and that's three-year-old Brianne. Okay? We moved back to the United States actually, this is on a trip over there, maybe. But it's about at this age, so I wanted to put that up there so you get what we're dealing with. So there is sweet little Brianne. One day, we get in the car, and it's her job, sit in her car seat and close it down. Okay, we get in the car, she gets in, Adam gets in, Abel gets in, my wife gets in, and I start backing up, and I start down the road, and April says, Brianne didn't get in her car seat. I said, Brianne, get in your car seat. And she wouldn't. So, I pull over by a creek, and I get out with little Brianne, and I have a talk, and I explain to her that God gave me the job to teach her to obey. And she didn't obey. And so I'm going to have to give you a spanking. So I have the lecture, and I talk to her about it. And I never used a switch on her. My mom used plenty of switches on me, but I went over and got a switch. And I said, I'm going to have to give you a spanking. Now, some of my kids have had a bunch of spankings. But this was, I don't know if I'd given her really many hard spanks before that day. And after we have the lecture, I spanked her. And she cried, but not the way you might have expected. I said, now get in the car seat. And she got up, and she sat down beside the car seat. Brianne, we had the lecture again, firmer this time. you are going to sit in the car seat. It is my job to teach you to obey. Lecture, 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 lecture. I spanked her harder, harder, harder. Now, Brianna, get in the car seat. This time, she got in the car and she sat down beside the car seat. Out she came again. Lecture again. Spank harder beside the car seat. Lectured her again. Spanked her hard again. Go sit down in your car seat. I think it was the fifth time that that little stinker finally sat down in her car seat. Later that day, I said, we're driving along, I said, Brianne, why did you do that? Did you think that if Daddy, you know, if you kept disobeying, did you think Daddy was going to give up? And she went, uh-huh. You know what needed to happen that day? My sweet little girl, that gift from God, needed to find out that Daddy wasn't going to give up. And she was pretty much full trouble after that. So the others have him, but she's it. But that day, she just went for it. Now, I could have done something a whole lot easier. The last guy I wrestled and pinned weighed 357 pounds. That was not that long ago. I think I could have got her into a car seat. Kicking and screaming, I think I could have buckled her into the car seat, but what would that have done? It would have controlled the situation, but it would not have trained her. You know what? I wasn't that worried. We were, probably weren't going that far. It's a, out in the country, not that much traffic. I think she would have survived if she had not been in the car seat. But there's authority. God tells me to obey, you know, the laws of the government. The laws of the government say that the child that age has to be in the car seat, and I'm the dad, and I told her to get in the car seat. It wasn't so much the car seat that was important to me, it's the obedience. And so what she had to do was she had to obey. I had to train her to obey. And so, summing this up, well, I'll tell you what a mom said that heard this some years ago in a different state. About 3 days later, 2 or 3 days later, she came to me and said, that was a life-altering lesson for me. Because she said, with my little girl, I've been, if she won't get in the chair, I just put her in the chair. You know, I just, now at a certain age, they don't understand and you have to do some things. But at 3 years old, Brianne knew what she was supposed to do. She said, after that lesson, after that point, I started making her obey and being consistent. And she said, I forget if it was 2 or 3 days, but after that short period of time, she said, she is a happier girl, and she's obeying. It's not that she's obeying, and, oh, this is terrible now. She's obeying, and she's happy. The tension is gone, that little battle where the little one is trying to see what they get away with. No, that was gone because she learned to just obey mom. And who did that help? That helped the child. You know what? Then you get a benefit for the parents as well. But who are we really trying to help? We're trying to help the child. Mere control versus training. Too many fathers have said this. I'll tell you one thing. I told them they're not going to do it while they're under my roof. Don't let your sons do that stuff under your roof. But if you think that's the extent of fathering, then be prepared for them to be doing it under somebody else's roof or their own roof. I told them not to do it under my roof. I didn't let them do it under my roof. I controlled them. Did Proverbs 22 say, control a child, and when he is old, he will not depart from it? Is that what it said? That's not what it said, did it? What did Proverbs 22:6 say? Train up a child in the way they should go. And when they are old, they will not depart from it. If I just control, but I hadn't gotten to his heart, then he's going to be saying what? I can't wait until I'm what age? We've all heard it. I can't wait till I'm 18. Because then he can be under his own roof and he can do it. And I don't need to be patting myself on the back saying I controlled them until they got out from under my roof. No, that's not what Proverbs 22 says. Proverbs 22 says, train them. Train them. Teach them self-control so they will behave themselves under the number of other roofs that they will be in and under their own roof. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart from it. And that involves training the heart. There was a little boy, his story's told, I think it was Bible class or school or something, and the teacher was telling him to sit down, and he wouldn't sit down, and said, sit down, sit down. He wouldn't sit down. Finally he had to sit down, and as he sat down, he said, well, all right, but I'm standing up on the inside. When that's the case, our training is done, because we want him sitting down on the outside, we want him sitting down on the inside. If you're here this evening, and you're apart from your heavenly Father, and you've been standing when he says sit, or the opposite, do what he wants you to do, not just on the outside, but on the inside. If you're subject to invitation, won't you come just stand and say,